Two people who really get upset about Smallville. Geek World. Geek World. Bumpin' Thursdays at noon.
We're back. You're listening to Geek World on 92.5 KYHY. We are your superhero, superhost, anime, and Dave, bringing you the best in the world of geek. Don't forget, if you want to get in touch with us, you can send us an email to geekworldradio@yahoo.com. Check out our website at geekworldradio.com. And follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/geekworldradio.
I'm actually blogging now, so I need everyone to read my brilliant, witty remarks,
because mm-hmm.
they're essential.
And as I said before, as I said before, you gotta keep an eye on the blog, because pretty soon we'll be geeking. Actually, by the time this plays, we may already have been geeking.
We've been geeking. Yep.
So yeah. You know,
we'd be geeking.
I think you'll enjoy the geeking.
I would have to agree with you. Well, it's not yet time to get upset about Smallville.
Not yet.
That will come later.
Yeah.
Now it's time to get upset about something completely different. In this movie, like we said, that we're going to next is very much like Surrogates.
Yeah.
It is the movie Gamer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this movie came out last summer, and it was
movie.
Movie. I use the term loosely, though it did play in theater, so I would say movie. Yeah. And they probably shot it on film.
So do some advertisements, but doesn't mean they're movies.
Yeah, it was shot on film. Would I call it a film? I don't know. But, you know, this movie is a, you know, big Gerard Butler action vehicle, directed by the guys who brought us Crank in Crank High Voltage. And it's basically, I mean, it is what it looks like on the screen, you know. I mean, I would say it's you know, Running Man a la online multiplayer deathmatch.
And that's pretty much the thing. A guy is, you know, convicted, wrongly convicted, whatever. He's a death row inmate, but, you know, you know that he's the guy you're following,
yeah.
So he probably shouldn't be there, you know.
Yeah.
And he's the best player, but the thing is, these are actual people, death row inmates, that are being played by, you know, a bunch of kids at home with their you know, video game controllers.
Yeah.
Gerard Butler is the best game and the best guy in the game. The best.
Yeah. The best.
I don't know.
Slayer. He was the best slayer.
Best toy.
Yeah, practically. Yeah.
And the premise is that, like, you know, the world was ripped by financial chaos all because of the prison system. And so Michael C. Hall saved the day by saying, I got something we can do. And then he, like, made money by letting prisoners kill each other.
I'm surprised they didn't just say, you know, it was the whole world was set into, like, you know, economic distress from, like, you know, Bush. I'm surprised they had to, you know, go into, you know, that stuff. But
I don't know. Maybe it's one of those movies that's going, oh, yeah, privatizing the prison system's a good idea.
Maybe, yeah. I mean, it's funny because I think we're going to, you know, end up saying that maybe you should watch Surrogates and Gamer together.
Okay. I'm gonna say this. I'm going to say it right now.
Yeah.
If your plan is to watch Gamer, if you have an intention of watching Gamer, we recommend that you watch it with Surrogates.
Yeah.
We reckon maybe watch Surrogates first, maybe, you know, like, and then watch Gamer. But we recommend that you watch them together.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're going to, if your plan is to watch Surrogates, we don't necessarily recommend that you then watch Gamer.
Yeah, not at all. And honestly, though, I would say the one thing is, I think that our Gamer review might have actually been a little more positive because we watched it at the same time as Gamer. And Gamer is just... Yeah, it's.
Now, as I was joking before, calling it a movie is kind of a joke in itself.
Yeah.
It really can't be considered a full movie because it's pretty much the preview. It's all action all the time with maybe, I don't know, a total of 3 minutes of stopping to talk.
Yeah.
That's it. Like 3 minutes of not action, which is entertaining and in a way visually stimulating. Like, I can't say that I was ever bored during it.
No.
I can't say that I ever actually thought to myself, hey, I really want to turn this off right now. Even that was a little bit gross, even though, you know, but I never, you know, it's like back when, like, MTV, like, on the weekend nights used to play techno music with all those weird, crazy videos.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes you just sit there mesmerized by it. Like, I can't turn it off. I just have to keep staring at Daft Punk, you know? I've just got to keep watching. And that's kind of how this felt. But it didn't, there didn't feel like a story that took you through.
No.
You didn't feel really connected to anyone, although, you know, Gerard Butler is fun to watch.
Well, you know, I think that, you know, certain directors have their own style. You know, for instance, like Quentin, you know, we know a lot of things that Quentin does, and, you know, Spielberg. And I would say that Mark Neveldine and Brian Taylor, who directed this movie, for better or for worse, have
you
a style.
Neveldine Taylor?
Yeah.
That's what they go by. They literally go by, Neveldine, like, their two, their two last names.
they have a style, for better or worse. And it's just this sort of, like, constant input, no real character development, and kind of two acts. There's not really a solid three-act structure. There's not really any sort of character development. It's pretty much just you kind of get thrown in this world with a psychopath of some sort.
Also, their style consists of a jacked, scraggly man running around a lot.
A jacked European scraggly man running around a lot.
That's good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, this movie is it's funny because while we were watching the movie, actually in the, I believe it was the very first scene, which is actually probably the worst part of the movie, but the whole movie is pretty bad. I'm sitting there with my mouth open, like, oh my God. And I turn over to you and I didn't realize who directed this movie when we were watching it. And I go, this movie was either directed by the dude who did Crank or the dude who did Smoking Aces.
Or Death Race.
Like,
Death Race was your other
one. Well, no, Death Race was, I said later.
Oh, and, Death Race is it because of the look, because of the desaturation.
Yeah, I mean, as far as I can tell, this movie is in the same world as the world of Death Race.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, they look exactly the same. They both have that that desaturated look. They both have the kind of post-apocalyptic themes of nihilism and sort of profit based on death matches. And
I guess when Joan Allen was blown up, Michael C. Hall took over.
Yeah, exactly. You know, they both have, you know, blonde white bad guys. I mean, they're practically the same movies. Oh, and both of the white, you know, European guys have to get over the hurdle of some, you know, crazed, you know, muscular black guy.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they're practically the same movie and practically in the same world, though I would say Death Race is a better movie. You know, the first
and in Death Race, he was able to make friends with the crazed.
Yes, exactly. They found a unity
with the crazed black guy that scratches up his face.
You know,
his own face,
like Latifah said, "Unity." It's unity.
Yeah,
and but the first scene, you know, I had a big issue with it mostly because it kind of encapsulates everything I hate about editing in movies. It was you know, there was no cut longer than 1 second. Everything half of the things were flash cuts. And, you know,
it was a music video.
Yeah, but listen, but the camera itself, like, was way too apt to go upside down. Like, I swear, half of this
That's their style, babe. That's their style.
It was like when I was watching, you know, Battlefield Earth and everything was, like, at a Dutch angle. It was like, why is everything shot like this?
I stare at you blankly.
Yeah.
What the hell is a Dutch angle?
It's sort of like a 90-degree angle. It sort of doesn't make sense why the camera's like that. The camera's at a 90-degree angle. And
okay.
So everyone's just sort of sideways, kind of, or diagonal rather, and it's just sort of like, you know, bizarre. And yeah, the movie itself is, it's like you said, it's one of those things where like you don't get bored, but it's not exactly easy to watch.
It's not that you're not bored because it's a good movie or a good story or you're engrossed in anything. You're just not bored because they keep making, like, because there's action constantly and your eyes are constantly stimulated.
Yeah.
It's not a matter of I'm not bored because I'm watching something good. No.
Yeah.
It's a matter of I'm not bored because there's things in front of my eyes.
One of the things we said about Caprica is we thought was really boring. If Caprica were more like Gamer, it wouldn't have helped.
Yeah.
Encapsulates the kind of, like...
Caprica would have been like Gamer had the Cylon started working sooner and every scene had come in and just shot up some people.
Yeah.
Every single scene. That would have made it closer to Gamer.
Yeah, pretty much. You know?
And it still would have been boring.
Yeah. you know, this movie has got a very solid age demographic. They're going for teen boys, like, without a doubt. I mean, this movie just says senseless violence, you know, boobs, and moments of being gross.
Yeah.
And two of those scenes I'm totally okay with. You know, I'll always, you know, it's funny.
Wrong with boobs?
That's exactly what I'm saying. There is no problem. I rate movies sometimes, like, you know, when you watch, like, gymnastics in the Olympics and they have, like, you know, they it's like everything's like 1.2 or like 3.2 and you're like, what's that extra 0.2 for? You don't really know. Well, I give movies ratings like that.
I'm just imagining people listening to this and thinking, What do you mean when I watch gymnastics?
People must watch the Olympics, right, at some
point. Yeah, but not necessarily the people that are listening to this show.
Okay, well, fine.
They watch the Olympics, but not necessarily gymnastics. But go ahead.
Okay,
keep going.
Okay,
keep going.
I'll keep going with your analogy.
I'll pick something. 1.3, 1.4.
I'll pick something more manly than gymnastics. Figure skating. say if you're watching figure skating. And so I like to give like those extra 0.3, 0.4 for things like boobs.
Right.
I'm a big proponent of boobs in movies.
Does that give this movie a 0.3?
I think, you know, once the 90s happened and all this, you know, BS PC movement happened and because of the age of pornography and internet, boobs kind of went by the wayside in movies. And I think like boobs are sort of like, you know, it's sort of like an important thing in movies. It's sort of a coming of age. I remember, you know, so much of my understanding of human development came from, you know, films. And really, it's
really
necessary.
Just about having anatomy lessons.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, really, I think it's wrong not to have
scholarly,
boobs.
Really.
Exactly. I think it's exactly for science. It should have that. You know, it's funny because it starts off, you know, everything's very kind of post, you know, not post-apocalyptic, but like post-utopian in the way that, like, you know, everything's sort of like screwed up in the world and everything looks like it's sort of dilapidated. But you see, you know, all these billboards of either Michael C. Hall's face, you know, he plays, you know, the main bad guy, who is called Castle, and or you'll see Gerard Butler's face everywhere. And it was funny because, you know, I made the comment that, you know, we live in L.A. and we've been to San Diego for the last few years, Comic-Con. So, you know, we live in a reality where we've seen Michael C. Hall's face, you know, plastered across the building. And so it was sort of funny watching.
Usually
that.
With a little splatter of blood.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, oh, look, it's Dexter. And it was kind of funny. But, they, you know, they even had, like, you know, a pyramid with a damn advertisement for it. Just so you know that people are really into this and that, you know, there's sort of an implosion of a sort of postmodern implosion of what's important in this planet. And basically, you know, like Death Race or like Running Man, it's a televised, you know, death battle royale, death match. But unlike something like Running Man or like, you know, Battle Royale, where they do have some sort of like political or, you know, some sort of like moral lesson they're trying to teach. They just wanted this sort of battlescape, you know, so that they can show lots of violence.
Well, but the problem was, you know, it's kind of like with Caprica, where their message is racism is bad and it's going to be slavery is bad.
That's what Caprica's like.
That's it. And we're like, well, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
This was, you know, getting too engrossed in video games so much so that humanity doesn't matter is bad.
Well, I would say it's more that, you know, pitting people against each other to die for everyone's entertainment, a la, you know, the Colosseum in Rome, is bad.
Well, that's my humanity doesn't matter.
Yeah. But I would say, you know, even outside of video games, it's the idea of, you know.
Right. Yeah.
But it's like, you know, been there, done that. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, this is, you know, the condemned, you know, as a video game.
Well, this is the condemned, except, you know, this time the redneck is running it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I really, like, I always appreciate when actors try to, you know, do something different. But, you know, Michael C. Hall's Southern accent, I wouldn't say it's as bad as Halle Berry's accent in the first X-Men movie, but it wasn't particularly great either. I didn't really understand. I just don't get why they make it necessary to have accents.
Because if he didn't, he would only be Dexter.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's the problem with him right now.
That's a really good point.
But the problem is that the way that he speaks, the way that he says words, and the way that he like kind of slowly speaks and is so kind of calm and serene, it makes it so that no matter what accent he's trying to use, he's still Dexter. And even beyond that, that no accent quite works.
You know, it's funny too, because I'm so used to him as Dexter, which is, you know, really kind of the, you know, penultimate anti-hero of TV at the moment, you know, next to, you know, Kiefer or something, because he's a serial killer who kills serial killers. And it's funny because he's always, you know, Dexter's kind of cool, as cool as a serial killer can be. And for him to play such a, you know, D-bag bad guy was kind of a little disappointing.
He's so complex and stuff in Dexter. And it's like, wow, way to be so simple.
And it's funny because I realize what they're doing is, you know, they wanted the exact, you know, opposite counterpart to Gerard Butler, who's kind of the, you know, stoic. I mean, he was very much, his character is very much like Russell Crowe from Gladiator. Actually, it was pretty much the exact same character as that, plus the character from Death Race. And you know, so they wanted the exact opposite of that. But at the same time, like, he was such a D-bag that it came off as sort of like, when is he going to get killed by the bad guy?
Honestly, though, like, this movie doesn't even require as much talking about it, like, about the actual parts of the movie as we're doing. You know, unlike Surrogates, where it's like, you know, you have a good thrill ride, you have a good adventure that you watch through, and then if afterwards, if you think about it, it's just dumb. Gamer is dumb the whole way through, but first off, the one positive is it doesn't take itself seriously.
No.
I do not believe that anyone in this movie believed that this movie was taking itself seriously.
No. Which is really funny because...
But the really, really funny part is how many famous people were.
That's what I was about to say. Okay, good. Yeah.
Let's stop reviewing people's acting.
It's insane.
Let's stop reviewing this movie because it's not about what this movie. We're not recommending that you see this movie, but we are recommending if you see this movie, see it with Surrogates.
Yeah, I agree. Well, yeah, run down the cast. Let's say real quick, you know, Surrogates, you know, had a decent cast with Bruce Willis and Radha Mitchell
They were practically it for names.
Yeah. And James Cromwell.
Right.
Yeah.
In terms of names, those three were really it.
Yeah. But freaking.
Well, actually, no, one more.
Rosamund Pike?
No.
Alvin Rames.
Yep.
Yeah. But, like, check it out for Gamer. It stars Gerard Butler, Michael C. Hall, Kira Sedgwick, Terry Crews, John Leguizamo, Alison Lohman, Ludacris, Keith David. And Amber Valletta.
And had cameos by
Milo Ventimiglia and James Rodet and Maggie Lawson from Psych, one of our favorite shows.
Yeah.
Oh, and I was very excited about this. John DeLancey, who though you might not know his name, you might know him as Q from Star Trek: The Next Generation.
And do you know the name of the guy that's in House?
No, I
okay.
Can't.
Well,
I
there's this guy
up.
That's been in House, and he's been in other
in
things, and we
Veronica
just
Mars.
Yeah, yeah, and we think he's awesome, and he was also in it. You know, it's like this.
It's an
the
extraordinary
movie,
cast.
Yeah, I don't understand.
It's
how this movie was able to get any of these people. To be perfectly honest, like Alison Lohman is married to one of them, right?
Yeah, Alison Lohman is directed to one of the directors.
So
yeah.
My theory,
I believe Mark Neveldine,
is that because Alison Lohman was kind of getting a lot of press, like for you know Drag Me to Hell and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
or you know maybe it was her like her name that kind of pulled things in, or maybe it was
the idea of the movie coming off the steam of 300 of Gerard Butler as an action star.
But even Gerard Butler, I don't know how they got him. That's my point. I don't know
Well, because I mean, you know.
Oh, right, because he's not American.
Listen, he's an actor in his you know late 30s, and he's Scottish.
Yeah,
and he can only do so many romantic comedies.
You're right. I think you made a good point when we were talking about it earlier. That when you and I were talking about it, that this was actually a good decision, despite it was a terrible movie.
Yeah.
It was a really good decision for him to do
totally.
Because with all these romantic comedies, like you were just bringing up that he's been doing. People needed to remember how much he kicks butt.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is a guy who had been in Hollywood for years. I mean, most people don't even know he played the Phantom of the Opera in the Phantom of the Opera Joel Schumacher movie. And, you know, with Emmy Rossum. He played the Phantom, and he sang in it. And he also, you know, was in Reign of Fire with Christian Bale and Matthew McConaughey. Christian Bale's, like, friend. He was in Dracula 2000 as Dracula. He was in, like... What was the other one? He was in Timeline. I mean, this guy's been around forever, but he didn't really get big until 300.
Kind of like Alexander Skarsgård was in Zoolander.
Yeah, that was great, wasn't it? Yeah. And so I think, you know, for him, I think it was a good idea because, you know, he has the ability to be this action star, and he was great in 300. So I think it was a good decision for him to make the movie.
Right.
I just don't think it was a good decision for the movie to be made.
Yes.
I mean, that's kind of the main thing. I mean, it's sort of like, it's just so...
I could see somebody, you know how like people like they'll have a party and they'll have music videos playing in the background?
Yeah.
I could see without sound this playing in the background somewhere.
Yeah.
Because there's so much happening.
It's
surreal. There is never really a visually dull moment.
Yeah.
And I don't mean visually good, that the moments are ever visually good.
Yeah.
But they're always visual.
Yeah, you know? It's funny because you couldn't even tell if there were any good shots in this movie because there was nothing. There was either if there was a shot.
Because if they were good, they may have been upside down.
Well, yeah, good point. If there was a shot that you know wasn't moving, it was only up for a second, and then every other shot was moving. Like you really couldn't see anything that was going on in this movie. Anyway.
Yeah.
You know, let's go to the action scenes though, real quick. Where you know, I think that people will mostly want to watch this for the action. I thought that I didn't like the what the camera was doing a lot of the time, but I felt there was some cool moments. You know, I think they had a cool part where there was a truck on fire, like flying through the sky, and you know, there was a lot of I really like they had these snow plows that were collecting human remains on the ground, and you know. But then there were weird moments that is, you know how in Crank there was just these oddball moments? You're like, what is going on in this? And why is this happening? Like the lady in the burka?
Well, it was, okay.
Like, what was that about?
That actually, I can actually explain to you what that was about. You know how it all started with The Sims?
Like,
the point was that before they had people killing each other, they had people that were playing other people as Sims, essentially.
Society.
Humans, Humans had become the actual Sims that were being controlled. And that was kind of the thing of how humanity doesn't matter, is what I was saying. Like, that people were just like, you could take your guy to walk across the street.
Yeah.
You could take your guy to be a spectator at Slayers. And they might have given them a Kevlar to put over, but that doesn't mean they're safe. Just like in the Sims game, you know, as soon as Gerard Butler was there and people were like bringing guns in, none of those people were safe. Even though they weren't the death row inmates.
Yeah.
None of them were safe. Nobody was safe. And that was the kind of thing that, like, even the people that weren't death row inmates still weren't safe.
Yeah, okay, that's a good point. You know, I agree with that. I mean, I don't know why they took them to the battlefield, but yeah, I could see, that's
because they wanted them to be spectators. They wanted to play as spectators.
Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Okay, yeah, good point.
Like, because they were all those people watching and, you know, lifting their shirts to Kevlar boobies.
Yes, yeah, I love that.
And it was a nun playing the lady with Kevlar boobies.
I would have to say, I think one of my favorite parts was, you know, when Gerard Butler got into that society area where it was no longer a death match, but then kind of the death match went there.
Yeah.
And it was sort of like, you know, it was sort of like Pleasantville or like a psycho Pleasantville, you know, getting more psycho. I don't know. What would you call it?
I guess kind of like that movie, Stay Tuned.
Yeah.
You know, flipping channels.
Yeah.
You know?
Or actually, you know, it's like Blazing Saddles when they start running through all the sets.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I kind of enjoyed how there were these, like, you know, people that were just sort of like dancing and doing stupid things and getting like shot out of nowhere.
And they were, the thing was that in the beginning when they were bringing the Sims thing, you know, when they were talking about it, like, they were trying to make it the humor because it's like, you know, people are playing, oh, look, it's wacky. But then they tried to give a message.
Yeah.
And then they stopped making any of it funny because the girls that were doing wacky things were also really upset that they had to be doing it.
Yeah.
Like,
it's sort of like if, you know, sort of like in Dollhouse, if the dolls were upset about being prostitutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I mean,
yeah, if like, you know, if there was a tear dripping down Echo's eye every time she was in bed with someone.
Yeah, exactly. I do have to say, it had a very interesting cameo by Milo. I gotta think, you know, if Milo was hoping that, you know, he wanted people to see him as more than just Peter Petrelli, congratulations, I now see you as a tiny meth head wrapped in rubber, who's very perverted.
Well, at least we know how they got him for this movie.
Yes,
he was in their movie Pathology, like he was one of the stars.
Yeah, of a movie that they wrote, Pathology, yeah. And I think, you know, what can I say other than, you know, he was, you know, humping Amber Valletta while grabbing her boob.
Yeah,
there you go.
There you go.
Hey, you know, good times. I think he should wear, that should be a superhero costume in Heroes, so.
Yeah.
I think, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Leather, you know. Leather thing.
No one needs a cape.
Yeah.
He just needs some leather.
Yeah, exactly. But, other than that, you know, I mean, they had some interesting things. And, you know, I just think, like, how much more interesting is this deathmatch kind of idea that's been going on forever? How much more interesting is it with, you know, a, like, kid playing the person? Like, is it really all that much? Is this really, this concept much any bigger from like Running Man or The Condemned or Human or Hard Target with that aspect?
It's not because it's still kind of purely that concept of, are people okay? You know, if they're death row inmates and people are okay with them dying, then like, then that's it. You know, that's kind of like the end all and be all of it, that people are just okay with them dying in whatever way they happen to die.
Yeah. I did it, there was one moment that I actually thought was kind of interesting, and that was when in the very beginning when Gerard Butler, you start off in the battlefield, you don't really know what's going on yet, and Gerard Butler is, he's got his gun pointed out of the window, and he notices there's a guy to his left, and he goes, turn around, and you realize he can't control himself.
Yeah.
In that moment, I actually felt a little fear for the character and thought that was kind of cool, because that was a good way to set up the whole Puppet Master thing.
On the other hand, then they realized that, they couldn't do that, too often, because then they'd have to stop the action for a moment.
Yeah, and that is not allowed.
So it really never happened again. Yeah. Ever.
I have to say, though, the funniest thing for me is Terry Crews in this movie.
Oh my God.
Terry Crews plays like the insane, the insane psycho killer who's supposed to be put in there to kill Gerard Butler. But what's so funny is, the dude looks the part, ex-NFL guy, and he's played heavies before, and he's a big muscular guy, and it was all really funny, especially the part. My favorite part is where Gerard Butler's firing at the fire range, and then they look over, and Terry Crews is just firing a machine gun. Not even aiming it, just looking at Gerard Butler, yeah, I'm gonna kill you. You're like, wow, really?
Yeah, he's just literally firing it, straight down.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, he's just firing it just nowhere. But the funniest thing is the reason I laughed is because I only see Terry Crews now when he's acting like that as President Camacho from Idiocracy.
It's true, which is possibly we love that movie.
It's great.
But maybe the best role that he has ever done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say Idiocracy is actually Mike Judge's best movie, and no one's really seen it. And it's funny because, Terry Crews is my second favorite movie president ever. My first would always have to be, Bill Pullman from Independence Day. But right under there is President Camacho from Idiocracy. And,
yeah.
I mean, the best thing Terry Crews, I think, has ever done. He's amazing in it. And so, that kind of, just made me giggle the whole time, because all I could think about was, President Camacho trying to kill Gerard Butler. There's Sam Witwer from Battlestar Galactica Smallville as Doomsday also had a cameo. So, it had a very impressive cast. But I also felt like it was very much wasted. I felt like Kira Sedgwick had kind of a non-character, and she's kind of better than
she's way better than that.
Than what
they
gave her. And same thing with Michael C. Hall. I mean, same thing with everybody.
This cast should have produced a better movie.
I agree. And, this just comes down to the writing and the directing. With that being said, I still think, I still think it was probably a little better than Terminator Salvation.
I agree.
I still think it was better than Mutant Chronicles.
Better than Powder Blue.
Better than Powder Blue. Better than Jennifer's Body. So
yeah.
Is this a terrible movie? Yes.
When this is on HBO or Showtime or whatever movie channel you have, we're not saying that you should, set it to record or make sure you watch it from the beginning.
Yeah.
But we're saying if you happen to turn on the TV and it happens to be on, you might spend a few minutes watching some bodies split into pieces.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that the coolest moment was getting the truck started.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just say it from there, and you can find it. You can find it for yourself. You watch it.
Kind of makes me think of Harsh Times, though.
Yes, a lot. Completely.
But actually, we are going to take our final quick break. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about Dollhouse,
yes,
a little bit about Smallville. And so we're going to, we'll be back.
Couple of great geeks, Dave and Anna, the geekiest people you'll ever meet, on 92.5 KYHY, Geek World, Thursdays at noon.
We're back. You're listening to Geek World on 92.5 KYHY. We are your superhero, superhost, anime, and Dave, bringing you the best in the world of geek. Are you following us on Twitter? Twitter.com/geekworldradio. Are you geeking with us on the website? Geekworldradio.com.
We be geeking.
You can send us an email, geekworldradio@yahoo.com.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You should do all those things right now.
All right now, but also listen.
Yes.
Stay listening.
So we don't have much time left because we've been so enthralled by Gamer and Surrogates. So we should get to Smallville real quick.
Because we're two people that get really upset about it.
I think if you listen to our show, you know that Smallville, the last two seasons, ever since Golf and Malara left, have been really good. And I think that, this episode certainly wouldn't go
And we're
down.
Not saying that they made the show a bad show. No, I mean, we're just saying that they kind of ran through all the things that they could do.
It's exactly. It's one of those things that, you know, the reason the show was great for so many seasons is because of those guys.
Yeah.
I mean, that without a doubt. But, you know, there comes a time when you sort of lose your artistic flair with things and you move on. And luckily, sometimes it doesn't go so well, but sometimes it does. And I think this time, you know, this new group of producers and writers are fantastic. You know, I would say about this episode, I wouldn't say it was great. It's definitely more of a Green Arrow-centered story.
Yeah.
Basically, it had this character, the Dark Archer, Vortigern, which, you know, I'm so lazy, I didn't look up to see if he's actually part of the DC Universe. I wouldn't be surprised if he was. Most likely, there was some sort of character like that. But,
yeah.
You know, I think one of the things that really impressed me was I like the fact that they're really going for the Lois and Clark thing. You know, you know, if you've watched Smallville, like us, who've seen every episode, you know that, you know, especially with all the Klonna stuff, it was always like, you know, if an episode started with Clark and Lana, like, dating, it ended with them breaking up.
Yeah.
Somehow. It was going to happen.
Every episode.
Yeah. And, you know, luckily they don't have the same problem because you know that, you know, Clark and Lois are destined to be together. But, you know, they're really going kind of all out now. I think they got to the point where they realized sort of like, you know, who knows how many seasons we're going to do. We're in our, like, ninth season now. This is amazing. So they're kind of going all out, which I think is a great idea. I think people want that from a TV show that they love. And so I'm really impressed that they're really going on with this. And it starts off with, you know, Clark and Lois after their fifth date. And, you know, Clark goes to go save some chick and Lois gets shot by an arrow.
Yeah.
And we find out that it's this guy from Oliver's past.
Well, first we worry that, oh my gosh, is Oliver on drugs again?
Yeah, he's jealous. He's on the rage drug or whatever. But we find out that it's this guy who, you know, was basically his master in this kind of like, I don't know, Archer cabal or something, this sort of secret society.
It was like, you know, Archer Freemason.
Yeah, basically. It reminded me a lot of Batman Begins, you know, when Bruce Wayne goes and becomes a ninja. You know, from there, you know, it was sort of like there was him and that Mia character who was sort of that prostitute slash cage fighter, which I still don't understand that episode. How could you be both a cage match fighter and a prostitute? Isn't part of being a prostitute not to get all beaten up and look all bad?
Well, I think that, you know, if you're a cage fighter, then you can then be a prostitute who can protect themselves.
That's a good point. Most
prostitutes, you know, that's right. They need their pimp. They need someone to watch out for them because, you know, people take advantage of a prostitute.
That's true. That's a good point.
But she can take care of herself.
Fantastic.
And then she doesn't have to give her money to a pimp.
Yes. Yes.
So, you know,
hey,
it's all good.
Know, I totally agree with you. I think that's a
there we
that,
go.
That's really
See, I
great.
Figured it out.
Yeah, that was great. That you're a true professional here.
So let's pretty much. I think the main thing here is that we're just happy to have Smallville back.
Yeah, I think I think the only other thing is that, you know, Zod obviously is the bad guy, and Zod's sort of taking the place of Lex Luthor a few seasons ago, where there's always like one or two tense conversations between, you know, Zod and Superman.
And I appreciate anyone who's done some work with Billy Piper.
Yes, yeah. Who doesn't? Other than that, we're glad it's back.
Especially when Billy Piper plays a prostitute.
I know. Oh, Billy Piper. She's the best. Ugh. She's so great.
Yeah.
It's funny because, you know, we love the first season of Secret Diary of Call Girl, and we kind of stopped watching the second season, but I think we'll get back to it at some point.
Yeah, we'll kind of watch them all as they're on DVD. Yeah.
And you know what's funny? You know, when you were talking about how Gamer was a great choice for Gerard Butler, I've been talking about a long time how, you know, Billy Piper... perfect. It was a great choice for her to do Secret Diary, because even though she has to be really brave and do a lot of stuff that, you know, kind of you can't be embarrassed by stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And there's quite a bit of nudity. It's like it's her show, you know. To go from, you know, being a pop star to, you know,
Doctor Who
to a show that, you know, is, you know, pretty big in England and big enough in America to have its third season on Showtime. I'm very impressed by her, and it was a really good decision. And, you know, it just goes to
big
show,
enough in America for Showtime to, you know, pay for the third season.
I agree. And to go back to my whole boobs comment, you know, there was this idea for a long time that if an actress, you know, showed her boobs, like, you know, she wouldn't be big. And that's just been so completely, like, demolished at this point. I mean, Angelina Jolie is a perfect example.
Yeah.
And so, you know, good for... I'm on the boob pulpit. I think if I were running for governor...
I mean, I think that Havoc did great things for Anne Hathaway.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, but, you know, Brokeback Mountain, she was top.
No, yeah, no, it's true.
And,
it's true.
Got a lot of, you know, got a lot of acclaim for that, in a way. Let's spend the rest of the time. Oh, one more thing. There was a Steven Seagal reference in Smallville.
There was.
There's been so many Steven Seagal references ever since Lawman. I wrote a few down that
I
remember.
The thing is, there were also some that we heard that were from things from like 20 years ago. from like 10 years ago that we had watched. Yeah, some of the references that we've heard lately to him were just things that we happened to watch that weren't from Lawman, like from during this time of Lawman.
He's just that awesome, isn't he?
Yeah.
I believe Big Bang had a Steven Seagal joke. I know Leverage had a Steven Seagal joke. Chuck had a Steven Seagal joke. So he's out there. But let's spend the rest of this time.
The one thing that upset us about Smallville.
Yeah, what was that?
Smallville, why you gotta talk like demons?
Oh, right. Yeah, because the guy is all
the Dark
like,
Archer.
School.
Dark Archer. Like,
what does he
like,
say? Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
All I can say is that at least Oliver didn't talk back to him in ye olde speak. like in Demons. Yeah. You know, now everyone's speaking ye olde sometimes.
Yeah,
but
Vortigern said, at last, the student heeds the master's call.
It's like, oh.
Who talks like that?
Apparently people in their stupid dark societies.
Was there a Buffy like that where someone's talking like that? And someone's like, who talks like that? Anyway.
It was probably Dracula or something,
yeah,
you know?
Exactly, yeah.
and then probably Xander when he was, you know, being mind controlled by him.
Yeah, exactly.
I will not be your butt monkey or whatever.
So let's talk about Dollhouse.
Absolutely.
Epitaph 2 aired, and it was the final Dollhouse, and Dollhouse is all over now.
Yeah, so this is kind of our farewell to Dollhouse.
Yeah.
Now, I'm going to start off by saying, this whole time, we've been championing Dollhouse.
Like crazy.
We've been telling you guys all to watch Dollhouse and all to do everything you can to support the show and get it to beyond a second season. And here we go, and we watched Epitaph 1 at Comic-Con, and we're telling you, you had to get the DVDs so that you could see Epitaph 1. And by the way, I hope you all saw Epitaph 1 before freaking Epitaph 2.
Yeah, that was a good decision, huh?
But, God, it's like, I feel like I should be apologizing to you all for making you watch this season.
It's been a bad season. Yeah, there was only a few good episodes this season. The first season was fantastic, and like we said, you know, Epitaph 1 made our like 2009, you know, best show you didn't see.
Yeah,
I mean, it was unbelievable.
And the problem is that season 2 even had a lot of great moments in it.
Yes, totally.
But the show itself, I think it was because it knew it was doomed, because it had pretty much, you know, been told that it was doomed, and the problem is that everyone in the show is awesome and should be working together. And it's like, I wouldn't even mind seeing them all working together again, because apparently not enough people saw Dollhouse anyway, so no one will have ever known they worked together before.
Seriously.
But I think we've come up with this theory of what Joss Whedon should do next.
I agree.
Because I almost, like, we're going to get into Dollhouse, and we're going to go over some of our, like, our memories of Dollhouse. Because I don't even really want to go through a review of Epitaph 2.
Let's just say this. Epitaph 1 was one of the best shows I saw on TV. Epitaph 2 is one of the worst finales I've ever seen.
I agree.
And it's clear that...
I am so unsatisfied.
It's clear that, you know, Joss out of the gate is amazing, but every finale for a show is terrible.
And I feel like in part it's because they shut him down so quickly and he just goes, well, screw you. This is how it's ending.
Which is funny because, you know, the same thing happened with Angel, though it was a lot more, he had a lot less time with Angel to figure out an ending. But, you know, even Buffy where, you know, well, actually, he was involved in the last episode. The finale wasn't really all that great.
The last five episodes were just kind of a downer.
Yeah, and, you know, Firefly, they never really got a chance to finish, but, you know.
But Firefly should have had way more stuff way more early on.
Yeah. Firefly was just, it was just kind of too much.
Yeah, Firefly had a chance. Firefly could have been great.
I agree. Had
all the River stuff started earlier.
Had the stuff that had happened in Serenity happened like halfway through Firefly, the show would have probably stayed
on
the air.
Had been inklings of River's physical abilities like three episodes in, even if it was just inklings, like she kicked something and like sent it across the room and then went back to her like, you know, trapped in herself, you know, like... That would have been fine, but you know, whatever. That's obviously a show that's been canceled now for years.
Yeah, exactly.
But we here at Geek World have a theory on what Joss Whedon should do next.
Let's hear it.
Joss Whedon should first off come up with an idea, but a fully formed idea.
Yeah,
I'm not just talking about, you know, I've got this little idea for Eliza.
Yeah.
No.
I'm pretty sure, you know, and I'm not 100%, but I'm pretty sure when we first talked about Dollhouse, I'd read an article that said that Joss Whedon and Elijah Dushku went to lunch, and Elijah Dushku was saying, I really want to work with you again, and Joss was like, huh, okay, and then, like, Joss went to the restroom, came back a few minutes later and said, I have an idea for a show, And that was sort of how Dollhouse was born.
Now, Buffy, the way it worked was that the premise was teenage vampire slayer.
Yeah.
It was, you already had at least like a basic understanding of the character from the movie. Even though the movie wasn't what Joss wanted exactly, it still laid the basework.
Yeah.
So the premise was teenage vampire slayer. But the setting was this place around a hellmouth.
Yeah.
The villains weren't all vampires.
Yeah.
You know, and the setting was also high school. Dollhouse, your villain, your setting, your premise is Dollhouse.
Yeah.
Like, the first season, you had Ballard on the outside, Echo on the inside, and they were two separate things, even though they were working towards coming together.
Which is funny, because it was sort of like in the first season of Battlestar Galactica, it was like, you know,
exactly.
Timo Pennekit by himself, it was one story, and the Galactica on the other.
But I mean, but that's like, I mean...
Which was when it was his best.
And Timo's character, and just him in general, was so endearing that he wasn't even supposed to make it like beyond that whole point. That all that stuff with him on Caprica was never supposed to happen. He wasn't supposed to make it beyond the miniseries. But he was so good in the part, and he was just so awesome, and the part was written so awesome that people wanted him.
Same thing that happened with Jack in Lost.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, so my point going back though is that Joss, when he comes up with a more complete idea that isn't just everything based on one thing, it's a really, he does really well. Angel worked really well as a spinoff, you know? So what he needs to do is come up with a fully formed idea and then bring it to Showtime or HBO.
Yes.
Bring it somewhere where a full season is 13 episodes.
Yeah.
Where you don't need to try and stretch out 24 episodes. Where 13 is all you're going for in the first place. And where you can be more extreme. I'm not saying that I want Joss Whedon making things where everyone's cursing and there's bloodshed all over the place. No, no, no. I don't need that. But let him have a little more of his freedom, because I mean, he's got such amazing ideas, and he's got such great people that he works with, and he brings out such great things in those people, and he gets other writers like Jaina Svensson, and you know, like, oh,
well,
there's,
I agree. I think that, you know, Joss seems to be going darker and darker every new project. And I think that, you know, if he's going to continue doing that, he should go to a place that, you know, he can get the most out of that. I mean, look at Alan Ball in True Blood.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, you know, it would be HBO Showtime, I think, would be a good place.
But I don't even necessarily think that he should stick to the dark. I think that he needs to add some more light to it. You know, it's kind of like, you know, Angel needed Lauren.
Lauren, yeah, totally.
You know, Buffy needed Xander and Willow.
Yeah.
You know, you need that comedy. You need the Zeppo.
I mean, that was, I think, what we said was the number one kind of linchpin that kind of killed Dollhouse, is the lack of humor.
Like, every episode where Enver... as we now know,
yes.
we actually have
Joker.
The correct what we're pretty sure is the correct pronunciation of people's words now
Joker.
That the show is over. Enver Jokai.
I haven't caught it. Oh, and Carly,
whenever he played Topher, whenever he had to do the Topher imitation, it was hilarious. His accents in general,
he's
could do
awesome.
Amazing, funny things.
Yeah,
and so when they let him do that, it was awesome. You know, like, but there was not enough humor to cut through the, your home show is about a prostitution ring.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, basically what we were talking yesterday, I said, you know, it's sort of like, if the movie Taken were, starring, those, you know, slaver guys who were in that, you know, one factory that had all the girls hooked up to IVs.
Yeah.
And like, you know, and then, you know, That was it. Yeah, pretty much it started those people.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just, you know, it just was too dark and too kind of unsettling and not enough, you know, humor involved. And yeah, I agree. I mean, that's what, you know, we've said for a while. And the second season was just so poor. And you know, we made a list of some of what we thought were the better episodes and the worst episodes. And down the line, all the bad ones are from season two.
Yeah.
Every one.
So why don't we just go through, why don't we start going through our memories, our favorite memories and our least favorite memories of, you know, Dolls, just the memories of Dollhouse.
The memories. Okay. Well, I would say that,
that includes episodes, by the way.
Okay. Well, I would say that for me, I mean, Dollhouse really reached its peak with Epitaph 1. You know, we saw
the episode none of you ever saw.
Yes, we saw it at Comic-Con, and you know, granted,
it's on the season one, the season one DVDs.
And granted, it's one of those things that, you know, at Comic-Con, everything always feels a little better, but at the same time, it was unbelievable. And, you know, to be perfectly honest, I feel like It would have either been better to A, just show Epitaph 1 instead of Epitaph 2, or take a 2-hour block to show them both, because I think they really did a disservice to Dollhouse fans by not showing it.
But Epitaph 2 was a disservice in itself.
That's what I mean, yeah.
Epitaph 1, it couldn't end on Epitaph 1.
Yeah.
But Epitaph 2 wasn't how it was supposed to end.
Well, if it had ended as Epitaph 1, it would have been as annoying as the end of Angel.
That's true.
You don't really know what happens. And, you know, and I mean, if my choices are Epitaph 1 or 2, I pick 1. I mean, 2 was just like, it was just sort of like a sad, like, ending. It was sort of like the ending of Pirates of the Caribbean 3. It was like, really? This is the end, huh?
It was also like the movie, Pirates of the Caribbean 3, where you just feel disappointed the entire time.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, I think it's really sad that more people haven't seen it, and I'm assuming part of the reason they didn't air it was, well, it's two reasons. I assume one is that they want to sell the first season DVD, and two is that, you know, they only want to play as many as they have to because they can get higher ratings with, like, a house rerun. But anyway, yeah, let's talk about, so I would say the best episode for me was Epitaph 1.
Yeah.
I would say after that, for me, one of the best episodes was Haunted, who was written by one of our favorite TV writers, Jaina Svensson. And it was just really funny. And I think Eliza did a great job. And basically the story was Eliza was imprinted with a lady who had died.
Mm-hmm.
And she basically, you know, went to her own funeral and heard, you know, what people really thought of her. And it was just as
But the whole thing
funny...
was for her to find out who killed her.
Yeah, exactly. It was this really funny episode and worked, you know, it was why we liked everything in the Whedonverse, because, you know, comedy was its main sort of source. I think that in the worst category, I would say by far the worst episode was Instinct.
Yes.
Which, you know, that was one that, you know, it was the second episode of the second season. You know, they made a Hail Mary and somehow survived in the second season.
Yeah.
And that's such a poor, boring, like, episode, right, like, pretty much right out of the gate.
Well, like, right out of the gate, their whole thing was, oh, it's an episode with Jamie Bamber. Look, it's Jamie Bamber and Timo Pennicott right off the gate, like
in
Vows. And so, you know, you start off season two with that, which the episode itself, it wasn't great, but it had some really great moments in it. Like the moment when, you know, Echo got her head hit and started flipping out and going through all of her past personalities.
Yeah, that was cool.
Eliza actually did a great job there. That's probably some of the best work that she's ever done, in that she really, really, like, when she would switch, she actually would go back into the zone of that character and not just be doing the voice of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I would say, you know, for Epitaph 2, actually one of the silver linings, I think Eliza actually had one of the better dramatic scenes that she's ever done.
The entire point was to give her that dramatic scene.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like it was meant to be there, but, you know.
But at the same time,
I appreciate that Joss wants to give Eliza a good scene.
Yeah, and at the same time, you know, it was a heavy moment for the character.
No, it was, that's my point, that the heavy moment almost seemed like the entire point was that they could give Eliza a moment.
I agree,
but we're not even going to go into that, because I don't even want to go into that.
You're saying that, like, the whole point of what happened kind of, like, felt tacked on, melodrama. All right, so I would say back in the best category, the episode Briar Rose, in which we first find out that Alpha is in fact Alan Tudyk, and that but you know, he plays dumb and kind of you know,
he plays computer just like, you know, secluded computer genius.
And he makes Ballard, you know, believe that Ballard's forcing him to, you know, to break into the dollhouse. And, you know, it was a scene where Alpha cut up Victor and he, downloaded whiskey into her head.
Yeah.
Was that the one they downloaded all the things in her? No, that was the episode after. Okay. And then you want to go back to worse real quick? What I think was one of the worst moments was Meet Jane Doe.
Yeah.
Which basically was an episode of Walker, Texas Ranger.
Yeah.
In Dollhouse.
Yeah.
The whole thing was just silly. It was, you know, Echo had ran away from the dollhouse and was helping a Latina immigrant lady who was, you know, wrongfully imprisoned.
I'm pretty sure that I saw an episode of, like, Charlie's Angels like that, where they, you know, where they dressed up and, like, infiltrated a prison so that they could get some chick out.
Yeah, I mean, I appreciate that they were going for, like, a different thing, but it just felt, like, so, like, filler. Like, terrible filler. And it just came out, like I said, Walker, Texas Ranger. I would say back in the best category would be the second episode from season two, The Target, was great.
Yeah.
The Deadliest Game episode where she was being hunted.
Yeah.
And we had commented on the time that it was actually a studio, the actual Fox made the decision to run that second. It was supposed to be fifth and
it was a really good idea because it, you know, if they hadn't played that, there might have been a little too much bore, you know, getting to it, you know, getting into the show. But that, like, that really picked it up and showed you what you could be getting from the show.
I agree. And other than that, just in the worst category, I thought, you know, Stop Loss, an episode where Victor became Borg, was
It was boring. It was no stupid.
Point.
Yeah.
I mean, we had already known enough about Victor at that point, and it was just silly. So let's go away from that, and we will talk about more about the moments.
Maybe instead of, like, you know, maybe if they had, instead of spending all that time, you know, making Echo a prostitute, they had spent a little more time developing the rest of this story.
Yeah.
Developing the other characters, developing anything and adding something other than Echo's a prostitute.
Yeah. So let's go just real quick with the moments. The moment in Vow where Jamie Bamber, Timo Pennekit, Battlestar Galactica got to fight, which I also fought in Battlestar Galactica once, so that was really cool. The first time Victor was imprinted with Topher.
Amazing.
I mean, come on. Like, you know, Enver Jokai needs to get work after this. He's spectacular. Like,
by the way, I just have to say that it looks like we've been calling Deichin Lachman Daikin. So,
yeah,
you know,
so
it looked like a Daikin, but,
well,
you know.
It's better than last episode where I referred to her as the Asian chick. So I guess in a way it's better that, you know.
At least I corrected you with the Australian.
Yes, exactly.
But Deichin.
Way to bring that up again, Dave.
Deichin and Jokai.
Deichin
and Enver.
I would say certainly one of my favorite moments, and probably the favorite moment of all the guys watching, was the episode where Eliza was in the Dominatrix outfit.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that whatsoever. Topher and Sierra playing laser tag.
That was pretty funny.
It was hilarious. I think that, you know, when in the first season, when Melly went Manchurian Candidate,
that was a great moment.
A great, great moment. I remember from, I think it was the first episode or second episode when Ballard, like, fought, like, five dudes and got shot and still survived.
Yeah,
really
that
awesome.
Was a great episode.
Yeah.
That was, like, when we were like, you all have to watch this show.
I guess I was in the episode Stage Fright. Yeah, and that was...
Yeah,
that
the
was...
episode itself, not a great episode, but that was the thing. Anytime you were having a bad Echo episode, you were having a great Ballard episode.
Yeah, and so you, like, were able to deal with it. You know, other than that, I think the two other things that I can remember, you know, being really, like, you know,
memorable.
Funny was, you know, Victor as Kiki
yes.
at the dance club. Beating up
and
the guy.
I'm just so impressed with Enver. It's a name that you might have some trouble pronouncing, but I'd like to hope that we're all using it in the next couple of years, that, like, he shows up all over the place, because that guy is so freaking talented.
Yeah.
Like, his impersonations are so spot on, and he's just so good for a guy that, like, no one's ever really heard of him before. He is... Like, Joss finds the most amazing people.
I consider him the MVP of the show. And the reason I do is he's sort of like a utility player on a baseball team. He can do everything. And, you know, a lot of the humor was based on him being able to do impressions and just kind of very different and everything. And he's unbelievable.
His language skills. Oh, my God.
He's just great. And it's super, super star in the show.
Another great moment, just any alpha moment. Just
Tudyk
was
yeah.
the perfect choice. It was totally unexpected. I did not expect for him to come in and be alpha.
Like, yeah.
I didn't expect that at all.
It was totally Jack, which is so funny.
I love Alan Tudyk.
Yeah.
But I love him even more because of this.
Well, to see him in Firefly is the dork of the group in Firefly, to be like this total, you know, badass is amazing. And also, you know, in the episode of Love Supreme, when he turned all the people in the dollhouse into, like, kung fu killers.
Yeah.
It was so awesome. And, you know, last but certainly not least, when we finally saw Amy Acker as Whiskey doing her little stripper dance ain't nothing wrong with that.
Other good moments were just having Summer Glau, even though she didn't get to do anything that fun.
Yeah,
you
just
know,
having her
just,
in was
just
great.
Having her there.
And her demise was pretty awesome.
And that episode where, you know, that guy, the serial killer, came in and turned chicks into, you know, human dolls,
yes,
essentially.
Yes, that was great. And I just have to say, Harry Lennox was great, too.
Amazing, yeah. And so, you know, sad to see it go, but at the same time, not sad to see it go.
Well, after Epitaph 2, it's kind of hard to go, man, that show should have stayed on the air.
But that's all the time that we have for this episode of Geek World. Don't forget to tune in same time next week, same time, same place. And send us an email, geekworldradio@yahoo.com. Follow us on our website, geekworldradio.com. And follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/geekworldradio.